Two hats. One with about a dozen questions that came in to me over the course of the past few weeks, and one with questions I have never seen. But I'm going to actually get myself a little, because I did jot some notes down for myself because I don't have such a great memory anymore, so. Oops. There we go. Mr. Warnick.
Yes.
May I have the first question, please?
All right. Well, Reverend Lydia, this one's from Rick Dowling, and it's, if you could change one thing for women in our culture, what would it be, or what advice, wish, do you have for women today?
Okay. Well, I did a little research, and it's still unfortunate to say that women still earn about 83 cents to the dollar. So while we have come a long way, baby, we certainly aren't there yet. So the question is, how do we change that? So some of the economics of women is a really challenging thing for us. But I recently heard something from the, I think the national director of NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Action League, and she linked reproductive rights to almost all other women's issues, that as long as women don't have the power and control to make choices around those their own bodies, including abortion and reproductive contraceptions, that's the word, family planning, thank you, that we cannot kind of shift this, because as soon as women are not able to have that kind of choice, and if they're having children before they want to, and before they're ready, and at a younger age, the economics shifts, the divorce rate goes up, all those things that greatly, greatly impact women's lives. So I would say that would be the primary thing for me is reproductive rights for women. But I asked my daughter, I was polling my family last night about some of these questions. And my daughter told me I could answer for her, that she said, for her generation as a 15-year-old, she said this, look how far you've come kind of energy around it. She said it doesn't cut it. And she said, including for race and including for gender and GLBTQ issues. So it might be true that we've come a long way, but if we keep that attitude as those of us in our generation and older, we will stop putting the energy forth for the changes that still desperately need to happen. So I want to really, like, you know, yes, we've come a long way, and that does not negate the very real needs that we have right now. And I asked my husband, and he mumbled something about changing the administration right now. But, and I can't say anything further about that from the pulpit. So, and my wish for women is that they have mentors, and that I feel so lucky that I had women mentors in my young adulthood. It began in my young adulthood, who really showed me the variety of ways to be a woman. And that's my wish for women, and my wish for older women is that we provide that mentorship to the generations that are coming after us. So.
All right. Uh-oh. This is from just now, and it's, how do you maintain hope in this broken world?
Is it signed?
No.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. You got to tell me who you are. All right, who was it? All right, Stephanie, thank you. That's a great question and a hard one, right? And every time we get this kind of onslaught of some new thing, right, some car, some bomb, some something, it can really bring us into places of despair. So I will say one thing is that this community provides me hope on a daily basis. I have the privilege of gathering with you in varieties of different settings all week long and seeing the commitment and the love you have, and that you and your experience of building this community so that this community can continue to be a beacon of hope into the world. And so that, I will say, the primary thing for me is that. And then other ways where I gather with people, and, you know, within my own co-housing community, with friends, and all those little acts that people bring into the world to bring beauty, artistry, love, justice, hope. The little acts of caring are what sustain me. So thank you for asking that question. So it's one that we need to, I think, keep asking ourselves and keep finding the answers from within our community as well.
All right. This is one from this week. Nancy DeLora wrote this. In the 9 months since last November's presidential election, we on the progressive side of the political spectrum have been encouraged to reach across the cultural, philosophical, political, economic, and other ick and al divides to better understand the differences that separate us as families, neighbors, and patriots, to seek and hear one another out. I'm listening, but my fear and frustration is this. Is it a one-sided effort? What evidence do we have that the other side wants to engage? And if not, what spiritual guidance can you give us to keep our minds and hearts open to seeking common ground?
Yeah, so as you can see, most of these are like a sermon series, right? So, but this is another beautiful question. Thank you, Nancy, for asking it. I can't see you right now, thank you, Nancy. So my own motto in life is to take care of my side of the street, to live my life in such a way that I can go to bed feeling like I've lived with integrity according to my values every single day. And when I don't, to kind of go back and figure out what was that I was so triggered by that I wasn't able to do that. And so that's helpful for me. And that is like no matter what is happening out there, whether it's, you know, conflicts within my own personal life or whether it is, you know, the state of the political world that I don't agree with. And then the other harder part is to pay attention when I become self-righteous and to note for myself how I can stop that tightening of myself that creates an us and a them and to recognize that that when I start to kind of blanket, you know, it's one thing to have beliefs that I'm solid in. It's another thing to make assumptions about all the other people who have some beliefs that I don't, that don't match mine. And it's really easy to do. We have a polarizing political system right now. And this is different from the last administration, to be sure. And then I try to kind of poke holes in my own theory, try to poke holes in my theory of us and them so that I can be a little bit more expansive. Does that make sense? So look to people I know who might be pro-life while I'm pro-choice and are still loving, caring, delightful people. try and have those conversations. I'm going to mention Hannah Grosser. Are you here, Hannah, this morning? Hannah has started, after the election, put something out on Nextdoor that said, hey, I'm looking to talk to people who are different from me. Would you like to meet me for coffee? Wow, right? Beautiful thing. Nextdoor is a social media site. And there's also another process called the Living Room Conversations that intentionally bring people together, specifically around the political thing, because that is like the divide that we are living with every single day. So there's ways to kind of keep opening ourselves up, or for me to keep opening myself up, to remembering to step away from the us and them and kind of blanketing someone as someone or someone's or everybody who voted this way as a particular type of person. And then I have people in my family also, and so they're really great lessons for me that they are politically not aligned with where I'm aligned, and they are beautiful, caring, loving people. So those are some of the things I do. It's helpful.
This one also, this is a new resident in Arvada, so you can identify yourself.
Okay, hi, Paul.
As a new resident in Arvada, I recently pleasantly introduced myself to a neighbor. He immediately voiced his anger at my resist bumper sticker, started cursing, yelling, keep the government out of my business, I don't want to be your friend.
Okay, so...
What to do?
Yeah. Well, how interesting, right? Like, what to do? All right, well then... this is, you know, and I will say the theme this year of the questions is along this line. So, He didn't want to go out for coffee. No, did not want to go out for coffee. So then I'd get back to my side of the sidewalk, right? So it would be tempting if it were me to start, you know, labeling this person as a jerk, as a, you know, and just finding all these ways to demonize this person. And my side of the sidewalk, my side is to try to come to that place of love and compassion. And so you can get curious. I wonder what happened in this person's life that just that one word, resist, had him paint a picture of me that made me someone he would never want to know. I wonder what stories he heard, he, right? Yeah. As a child that created this kind of worldview for him. I wonder if there's violence in his background that has him so afraid of difference. So if you can, when I turn to wonder, my heart can just soften a little bit. The other thing I do with, I've done with people who I have a really difficult time is imagine them as a child. And when we imagine people as children, it's like you kind of smile or you just, you know, the children are vulnerable. And just imagine them as a child. And maybe the vulnerabilities of a child, but also the joy of a child. And what, you know, and you don't have to like make up stories that then you believe about that person. Because, you know, but to just open yourself up to the wholeness of a person who, for whatever reason, cannot see and accept your wholeness as a person. So for me, it would be inner work to be with someone like that as a neighbor. And I've had difficult neighbors, and I know that's hard. To kind of figure out how to remain in relationship. You know, in whatever relationship you can, it doesn't have to be like, let's hang out. But for me, it's like an internal relationship of integrity with myself and that other person. Does that make sense? Sort of. Wouldn't it be nice if there was just like the answer? Like, live the questions.
Well, there was a commercial where the answer was, bring them a Pepsi.
Yeah, bring them a Pepsi.
And I know this, it's not my turn to do this, but if you were to just bring the person a gift every once in a while and just say, I don't have any problem with you and here's a gift for you.
Hmm. There you go.
It's hard to resist a piece of pie. All right. This will be along the same lines. You might want to just get another question, but
no, that's all right.
What do we do as a response to Charlottesville? This is from Amy Cole during the week.
Yeah. So the first thing we need to do is contact Cory Gardner and thank him. Did you hear that he came out so strongly around President Trump's... President Trump responded as if it was like many sides were a part of the violence, right? And Cory Gardner is not someone I would normally contact to thank, but contact him and thank him, right? So that's the first thing I want to recommend that we all do.
Can you say what he said?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, what Cory Gardner said? Thank you. Cory Gardner came out and said the president, the Oval Office, needs to condemn this as an act of violence and that we cannot tolerate white supremacy. He called it domestic terrorism. Thank you. Call it out as white nationalism. So that's really admirable for someone to go against their own party, and a party that has this much divisiveness and also like, you know, if you don't toe the line, you're out kind of party, right?
He said, call it out as white
nationalism. Yes. Yeah. So read up on it and then call him. Okay. So that's just absolutely beautiful, and that is a part of kind of the changing the narrative, right? That changes the narrative to have Republicans, you know, conservative Republicans using the language of white supremacy, domestic terrorism, and all that. So that's really, really, really great. So he was starting to change that. Thank him. Then there's just kind of, I also had this sense of a pastoral response. Use social media to make sure that the people in Charlotte know that they are loved and supported, you know, by the people in Boulder, by you as a person in Boulder. So I'm sure that there are ways to do that. I haven't done that yet myself, but just find those ways to send your heart, send your love, send, you know, whatever that is, so that the love can be felt as well amidst the shock from people who are in the trauma of this event. From a justice perspective, we just have to keep speaking our truth and courageously, right? And be looking here to show up here when things are happening. The next time, and I hope there isn't a next time, but you know, if the Jewish Community Center in Boulder gets another bomb threat, show up. Bring them flowers. Write it down on social, you know, write something about it on social media. Like, we have to just keep bringing that other voice in that says, this is not going to be tolerated. So, and how do we show up here in our neck of the woods? Because things are happening here as well. Go to Boulder Pride, you know, do those things that, that say there's a whole other group of people out here that won't tolerate intolerance. So,
this will be welcome, I think. What is the funniest thing you have done?
Oh no! Who asked me that? That came over here? Bryn. Oh man, the funniest thing I've done. I hate being put on the spot for about those things. The funniest thing I have done. Oh my Lord. Well, I used to be kind of a class clown in high school and junior high, so I can't. Gosh. Oh, I'm stumped.
Ask your family.
Yeah. Yeah, I will have my husband answer that question. He's known me over half my life now. Do you have any ideas? What's the funniest thing I've ever done? So, well, you got to know I'm a recovering serious person, so this is like a really hard one. Like, I was so serious. When he met me, I was like this totally serious social justice, like, so, oh, Halloween costumes. All right, so Bryn, I promise to post on the BVUUF website one of my Halloween costumes, okay? Oh, they're usually just some mishmash of something bizarro. Last year I had a mullet, like a big mullet, and a... God, what was that? Oh, and I have these disco pants that I wear. They're blue with fringe on them. I've worn those. I've been a pregnant nun. I've been... One year I came to a Halloween event here as a holy cow, so I had a cow outfit, and then a bell that had a chalice on it, a big cowbell that had a chalice on it. So that kind of stuff. Jailbird, you know. I will post one on the BVUF website, note to self, all right? And you guys can look for it. Oh, Lordy.
The question was just for one funny thing, but that's all.
Good point. I guess I do some funny things, maybe, from time to time.
This is from Camille Hook. What is the UU version of turn the other cheek? I'm guessing it has to do with spiritual justice, setting a boundary for others while not confronting and engaging further conflict. Is that even possible? Especially in families of mixed cultures where in-laws' culture differs significantly from your own. Part two, do you agree that in families it's okay to sometimes not take the when in Rome philosophy?
Okay, so I'm looking at the time, and if I'm correct, oh no, there's 10 minutes. Okay, we're going to go till about five of, so we have about five more minutes. I loved this question because turn the other cheek has often been interpreted, like biblically, as being some kind of a passive resistance, and it's not. The intention was never to allow oneself to be hurt. It was the intention of that in the teachings of Jesus, and it shows up in other religious teachings, is to not get triggered into a retaliatory act. And it was connected in the life of Jesus to eye for an eye. So it's the opposite of an eye for an eye. Right? It is, so you have an act towards you, and you need to learn how to create your own boundary without retaliating. So I want to just say that part. My mantra for relationships, especially stress-filled ones, is for me to say, to stay soft, connected, and boundaried, and that's my own boundary. So the soft is, if I see myself starting to tighten up, that means I'm more likely to engage in a retaliatory, even like sneaky punitive act. I can think about it with my children, of course. It's like, you know, consequence ends up being like, I'm gonna stick it to you, right? So if I'm soft enough, those of you who are parents might know that, if I'm soft enough, I can stay in relationship. That's the connected part, because while we're in relationship with people, we still have influence. Once, one of the organizing adages I learned that I love is a challenge without a relationship is an irritant. So you can't have influence. You can't challenge somebody unless the relationship is there for them to be able to hear that challenge. Otherwise, you just get the resistance and they just continue out. And the final one is boundaried. And for me, the boundary is me setting my boundary, not in assuming that other people I have to pave their world for them. I'm going to set my boundary. So my boundary, I was thinking about this in-laws thing, and I came up with my little example. There's a family trip around the world the in-laws are planning, and if it didn't work for me because it would be out of my alignment with my values about my carbon footprint, let's say. So here is this family saying, we're going to go on this family trip. I was also thinking cultural differences where we eat, cow's brains or whatever, monkey brains, I guess. So that I state what my boundary is, I'm not really willing to take that trip because I have a value that to remain in integrity with myself, I have a value about not having my carbon footprint. Can we come up with something else or have a great time? Right? Have fun. Tell me, send me a postcard. So that's where I try to find my line in my own life about interacting with difference. Does that make sense to anybody? Okay.
Here's a nice simple one from Christiane Olivo.
Yeah.
Recently departed president. Do you believe in God? If so, what do you believe?
It was a little simple question. So, great question for a UU minister, though. I want to thank you. So Forrest Church used to say when people said, I don't believe in God, he would say, tell me about the God you don't believe in. And then he would say, because I probably don't believe in that God as well. So I God is such a big and loaded word, right? And so I would say that I don't believe in the God of my childhood God, which was based in the biblical context and rather anthropomorphized. But I do believe that there is some greater mystery beyond us. And I might call that love. I might call that spiritual energy. I think one of the most influential ways for me to think about it was through the work of process theology, which talked about God. And it comes from the Christian tradition, so I've kind of broadened it for kind of my more panentheistic approach, that there's a spirit of life in everything. There's a spirit. And in process theology, they talk about God as the lure for everything to reach its highest potentiality. And so with free will, we have the choice to be attentive and to use spiritual practices and to kind of tap in to that life force energy, to that ground of all being, love, or we turn away from it. And sometimes that, in some contexts, that's called like sin or, ignoring or not ignoring. Scratch that part that I'm moving. But so for me, and using that definition, you can also see kind of evolution as God. It's like the life force that got that little fish to, whatever it was, these mutations, is like it's something moving towards a greater potentiality of consciousness, and of a kind of evolutionary process. So that's kind of where I am, and it's all a mystery, and I'm willing tomorrow to scrap that and go for something else. But I haven't, I think there is just something, something greater that, and that it, in moments I can feel deeply rooted in, this power of love, and often I'm just living my life on the tread wheel like everybody else, so. Helpful? Anything else? One more?
This is from Dave Leonard.
Oh.
What might be the best UU reaction to the total eclipse of the sun?
Awesome.
Science or spirituality or mysticism or ?
Yeah, so I think it's a scientific fact, right? It's like it's something that's happening. And it can tap us into a place of awe and wonder and have us in this space of, because of its coming and because of the way we're talking about the nature of the universe and how large the universe is and these big scientific moving objects around us, it can give us this sense of perspective about who we are in the nature of things, which to me is part of the spiritual realm. And so the awe and the wonder about this scientific fact, this scientific event, can have a deeply spiritual underpinning to it. So thank you for the question. Good one to end on, yeah. And thank you for all of your questions. And I'm glad to just sit around and, well, I'll be having the chat, so who knows? If you come to the chat, we can take up some more of the questions as well. So thank you. I love you all.